Welcome to Dr. Fred Bell's Health, Science, and Energy Show. April 19, 2008. Had a great girl on last night, Terry Nazon. We talked about the goofy executive department, Bush administration, from an astrological point of view, and found out they all have the same charge as Hitler and all his henchmen. Anyhow, tonight we're going to have, that's a good show to go listen to if you didn't hear it on the archives. So anyway, we're going to go ahead and let Dr. Bell speak here again, as he always does. This is going to be a very interesting little surprise for you, a little lecture I did a little while back. I think you'll enjoy it. Well, Dr. Bell, are you there? Hello? Dr. Bell. Excuse me, where are you?
My background basically is to the tape that my name is Dr. Fred Bell. I started into energy when I was pretty small, about 6 or 7 years old. I was working at the University of Michigan when I was about 14 on atomic energy. And I went into the Air Force, and I was an early warning radar. And I worked around our defense system and spaceships and flying saucers and all the things that the Air Force doesn't want to talk about. I got out of that, I went into aerospace, and I worked with the late Wernher von Braun. We built spaceships. This was back in the mid-60s. And when I realized what the Air Force was starting to turn me against the system back in the late 50s, and by the time I got into the mid-60s working for the government, 10 years by this time, I was so turned against the system at this point in time that all I could do is not wait until the couldn't even wait till the space programs ended, but somehow I made it through to the end. Got real rebellious towards the end of the space program, and I was working. My employer was Rockwell, but our contractor was NASA, and Rockwell was performing such a poor service for NASA, and it was the government's money, people's money that was being spent, that I filed a large grievance on behalf of myself against Rockwell for NASA. And promptly got fired for doing that. So I was out of a profession. I was a professional scientist by this point. And the grievance was about fire hazards and human consciousness, the awareness of the job on the birds. And we were having a lot of fires. As a result of my grievance, these three people died down in the Cape. If you remember that one incident where the three astronauts died. And my grievance was to stop that from happening, because I could see that happening. So when that happened, then they gave me my job back, and I resigned, and I walked out. That was my end of the government spending. But I started studying with the Eastern teachers for quite a while. I spent a number of years with them, and learned the Eastern way of life, which, when I studied Brahman science, made a lot more sense than the American science, because when I was studying the quantum mechanics and quantum physics and things like that, all we would say in this country was that if you have a certain condition in a laboratory or an environment, a product, a certain type of particle present, maybe something will happen, And it didn't mean anything to me. So with the Brahman science, they had names for families of energy. So I really began to work seriously with energy. Then I finished my PhD in homeopathic medicine and came back and started lecturing with the National Health Federation. And since that time, it's been about 6-7 years since I've been doing that. And I, of course, have been doing a lot of pyramid energies and developing the space travel devices that I was interested in developing back at NASA, but Uncle Sam wouldn't let us do that because it was a giant WPA project, and they figured it would be detrimental to the national economy to come on with these environmental projects too soon. They wanted to wait until we got into a situation like we are in now. The situation we're in now is that we've destroyed our water supply worldwide. We've raped our soil of minerals. Most people in the world are mineral deficient and not aware of it. And we're running out of air. So, your feelings come from three different places. They come from, number one, your air. That's your first source of feelings. Second source of feelings comes from relationships, communication with each other, experiencing each other. And the third source of feelings comes from the food that we eat. Well, you can eat junk food for 10 or 15 years before it has a detrimental effect on the body. You end up with cancer or one of the diseases that you can have. It's your choice. You can have an argument with someone and have a bad relationship and still live on the physical plane for quite a while, maybe not feeling too well, or you can live in harmony. But if you just hold your breath for about 2 or 3 minutes and try to go out the door, you won't make it. So society has put a time, has put a fuse you've fused yourselves, basically. I'm not saying I'm not part of it, because I'm just as guilty as the next person. I'm just one that's trying to do something about it. And you fuse yourselves with your air supply, even though you look out here and it looks fairly clear. There's a tremendous amount of smog out here, even now.
There ain't a lot of air up there. And when you realize how one of those big 747s with four engines on it, developing 56,000 pounds of thrust or horsepower, that's 200,000 horsepower being used per second, you know. That's a lot of air, you know. And the trees on the planet down here, which are supposed to rejuvenate our atmosphere, can't do that. Because what are we doing? We're cutting our trees down, too, to build houses. Look at the price of wood. So you see the dilemma that we're going into? So we do have to have intervention now. It's necessary because we got to destroy, you know, this imagination. The government, the corrupt government, will have to be eliminated. And man can't eliminate it. God has to. If man tries it, he's called a rebellion, you know, we're called rebels or whatever. So we're going into what is called a revolution. And that's called a spiritual revolution. Now, my great-great-grandfather was a leader of a revolution, Ethan Allen, in this country. And they started a war in 1776. And we had a problem there. You know, people have a tendency not to get into action, even when all the facts were presented. Now, in 1620, when we came over here, we left England, right? To get away from taxation without representation is what we're having again right now, the same problem. So first of all, we ran away from England. When we ran away from England, we came here. The English just waited for us to get settled in our colonies, and then they began to infiltrate us, you know, a little bit here, a little bit there. So finally, the colonies were a joke in England. They would probe us with their red coat regulars, and they would keep a fear trip going, like, you know, a paranoia always manifests in these times. And they kept us going, and so we didn't do anything about it. It started to get real bad. Well, then we decided we're going to have to get away and run them out. So we asked them to leave, and of course they didn't leave. So we had to organize ourselves. So the first thing we had to do was make our organization up and decide what we wanted to base our rebellion on. So we tried to draw up the Constitution of the United States. But when it was written, nobody would sign it, okay? And John Adams, one of the people that wrote it, had a hell of a time even getting it written because there was such fight amongst the sons of the aristocrats that were at that time our representatives, just like we have the same problems now. It's like having a bunch of representatives of oil companies. If you read some of the names back here on your chart, which is in the back room where the children are, you'll find that a lot of, like Lynch was there, who has Merle C. Lynch today. And you'll see a lot of powerful families in running this greed trip today that signed that Constitution. And John Adams used to, you know, just absolutely tell them off, you know. And, of course, Benjamin Franklin was always soothing him and saying, well, this is the best you got to work with, man. You got to work with these people. So that conflict was going on simultaneously. It was George Washington who has more of the sons of the aristocrats over at Valley Forge. And he's waiting at Valley Forge, he's running out of food, money, and supplies for somebody to sign a Declaration of Independence so that he can start a war, you know, start shooting. But there's this huge stalemate. Nobody would do anything. Well, Ethan Allen came along. He was very rebellious, and he knew of both stalemates. And he was going on the inner levels. Well, we're always guided. I'll show some films later on today. Did that TV set arrive, by the way, that was supposed to come? We're going to need that later. Otherwise, we use mine, which is very small. And you'll see that there is an inner hierarchy, which we'll talk about late this afternoon, that guides this country. And so they got a person by the name of Saint Germain came and appeared on the balcony inside the Continental Congress room at a meeting and got him to sign that document. He gave a heck of a delivery of a speech, and this energy that he released motivated everybody to sign the document. Well, superphysically, Ethan Allen picked up on it, and he organized 50 people into a bridge in Lexington, Massachusetts, and he opened fire on a bunch of British regulars, just shot them down, you know. Then he went to Fort Ticonderoga, okay, and in the middle of the night, and the general was asleep, but he had 50 men. He says, wait outside, took a musket, took it up, went to the general's quarters and stuck it down his throat and said, pulled the hammer back and said, surrender, you know. The guy had no choice, so they go out and courtroom, and 800 soldiers come out half dressed and put their guns in a pile, And they'd taken Fort Ticonderoga. Then Ethan Allen sent a message down to George Washington and said, told of the massacre the day before and the capture of the fort that night. And he says, you better get rolling because we, as soon as the British find out about this, they're going to be shooting at you. So then away, then the war started. So that was the beginning of our war and our freedom. Well, the premise of the war, and it was George Washington, he was in the lodges, he was a Freemason and that. And our forefathers dedicated this land to the New Age people. They knew in the New Age that their sons and daughters would be the reincarnations of the Atlantean civilization, you know, the good side of the Atlantean civilization. They would get inherit the American soil. They knew this. And the next thing happened was we had to symbolize this on the dollar. This is what we chose. So three other lodge brothers, Van Buren, who became a president, Tyler, and Gene Lafitte, the pirate, got together. And they were also into the secret inner teachings and guidance of the country. And they coined the Great Seal of the United States as a pyramid. This was in 1779. But the Continental Congress, which was a secondary, what I would say, level of consciousness, could not understand what the leaders were all about, even at that time. So they wouldn't put that symbol on the dollar bill until 1939 on the Series A dollar bill. So you begin to see that there's a tremendous gap between the true leaders of this country and the followers that have to take care of the pragmatics. In other words, there's a big gap between the president and the congressman or the senator. But as time went on, our beautiful values, see, the country became very rich. And when it became very rich, it became lazy. And that's the story of civilization, you know. You feed a lion real well, he doesn't go out and hunt anymore. He just lays around and lets the women do it, you know. And so the woman in this case was the women in this country. They physically went to work, and they were treated like hell. So we had the rebellion of the women. The women were doing everything in the early, you know, in a lot of manufacturing things in the late 1800s, early 1900s, in England and here, too. And so you begin to see all of the things that go on in corruption beginning happen, and it happened. So we got some dues to pay. That's all there is to it. We have some dues at this time. So now we have the New Age leaders, people like myself. And we know, we can see, because we have the foresight to see what has been. And we're not afraid to admit where we are now. And that's why I wear my dunce cap here, this pyramid, because I'll leave this thing on until, number one, I've cleaned the air back up. Number two, I've restored the food back and the soil back to its original condition. And number three, got rid of the air, the water pollution. I'll do all three of those things. I may do it alone, or I'll do it with the help of anyone that wants to join me. And there are quite a few organizations now that are doing it, you know. Because my children are not going to, I'm not going to leave this planet without leaving it cleaned up for my kids, you know, and their generations. I have enough courage and enough respect for God at this point in the universe to, I don't care what has been done, I'm not going to say that my state is because of that. I'm going to change the state that I'm in by changing my state. So we begin to start somewhere. So I'll start with a slideshow now and show you about our own temples a little bit.
Well, we start with the root of the body, which is the colon. In the yogis and the new yoga, it's the sacral chakra. But the primary organ in the body where all disease and degeneration begins is the large intestine. Now, how many of you in here have been to colon lectures? Anybody in here? All of you? Well, you have. Okay. And most of the main topic of the National Health Federation, and each of us has a part, like Dr. Yamayamas and Dr. Ellis and that are covering a lot with fluoridation and the effects of the water. In other parts of the country, we're talking a lot about colon therapy, and when I do most of my lectures with the National Health Federation, it's on the topic of poison environments and atmosphere and oxygen on the body. So now, the large intestine digests all of the minerals coming into the body. And my specialty in medicine is homeopathic medicine. I'm a homeopathic physician. So this is one of my degree areas where I've studied and specialized for the last several years. And we find that most people have colons that look like this rather than like this. 90% of people coming into our clinics look like that. And what's happening is why they look like this, they're shriveling up like this. This is the dehydrating effect right here. This is the descending colon where it goes for release out. This is dehydrated due to what preservatives and food substances will do for you. It dehydrates the colon. proper irregularity causes a stretching action in the colon, and most people that have had a heart attack and lived from it did not have a heart attack at all, but the colon was stretched up, like on this one, up against the heart and causes a cardiac restriction. So heart attack has one symptom, death. Pseudo heart attack has cramping and everything like a heart attack, but there's not really a heart attack. A lot of people have had this symptom here. And of course, when they give nitroglycerin, this will help it because it forces the heart muscles into contraction and restriction back and forth, so it forces this away. But the ideal thing is colon therapy. A lot of people that are hyperactive, people come to me and say they're hyperactive, they've got too much energy, and they're jumping around like a nervous cat. It's not caused by an overactive adrenal and lots of adrenaline in the blood. It's caused by poisons in the blood. Okay? When I studied with the Tibetans put me through an exercise as a final initiation before I left their lamasteric care. And that's where large amounts of strychnine were placed in my body. Enough strychnine was placed in my body to kill 50 people. And that was to give the experience of what they call a death experience. And when this large amount of strychnine was placed in my body, I was taught certain meditation exercises, certain physical exercises, and certain yoga exercises, which I had to combine to move the poison out of my body so that I would not lose my form. The experience was very, very euphoric, but it was very rigid on the body. It was very nauseous. The American Indians did the same experience with the peyote button. They used to take the peyote button, because any of these experiences stop the flow of serotonin on the pineal gland, which we'll cover in a little while, causing a spiritual experience or a revelation of our higher nature that's suddenly brought before us. And I found that with the strychnine in my body, I had an excessive amount of energy. It did not stimulate the adrenaline. It gave me an excessive amount of energy. And this was a three-day ritual out on the desert. So what I had to do with the strychnine is I had to do running. I had to physically run for a certain length of time. Then I had to sit in what is called a kundalini position and do a large amount of breathing exercise where you go. What this did was put large amounts of oxygen into the bloodstream so that the oxygenated blood in the liver can take the poison from my body. And this exchanging process of large amounts of oxygen, this excessive running and the meditation in the liver caused a complete discharge of the poison. And this would happen, it would come in rushes. There would be 3 or 4 hours of meditation and peace, and the system would pick up a large amount of strychnine and go into like a spasm. You'd have to work through that and go into a peaceful thing. And each time as the poison decreased in the body, it pulled out other toxins with it, and the experience was a very high euphoric experience on the second day. The American Indians did the same thing, the same exercise, as the Tibetans only did with a rattlesnake bite. The rattlesnake bite, the grave was put in a circle of rocks in a sacred burial ground or sacred ground, and they had the blessings of the tribe. So this kept the air purified during this out-of-body experience so that some low influence didn't take the body, and the brave would let the snake bite him several times on the first day, and then he would be on a fast for 3 or 4 days, maybe 7 days. And there was no administration to the poison in the body. It was not removed. It was consumed and converted. So that means that a human being with colon problems, with worms, can absorb the poison, can utilize the poison, but it's not the best way to go, and it's not a desirous experience. So the idea is to remove these things. The second thing that we find in colon therapy is the small intestine feeds the large intestine, and there's a valve called the ileocecal valve. Most people have a jammed or blocked ileocecal valve. I was a vegetarian for 7 years before I had my first colonic, and I had a blocked valve. So when we put the barium in through here, the barium not only showed the deficiencies in the large intestine, but it went up in the small intestine as well. So the oxygen water treatment with the gift to get rid of this condition will also open this valve and it will cause it to work properly. Okay? And digestion is an important thing to understand. And basically, the way the digestive process works in the human being is this. The enzyme is a chemical product or chemical property that we all have. We have different enzymes to break down different foods. And the enzyme goes in and a chemical reaction but is not consumed by that chemical reaction. So if we eat some food, and that's going to be broken down to form protein, certain enzymes are always required. Now the body can only process so many enzymes at a time. That's why they'll tell you to mix carbohydrate and fruit, or fruit and protein, or carbohydrate and protein, but not to mix fruit and vegetables, things like that, certain combinations, because the body cannot manufacture all these enzymes and produce them and digest them and process them in the stomach. So you end up with some kind of an alimentary canal problem because you combine the wrong food. That's why we have these little food charts out now. And a good thing that I learned from Pablo Arroyo, which I've always done, is that when you eat salads, eat your salad last in a meal. Don't eat it first. Because the salad distributes the hydrochloric acid all over the stomach. So the hydrochloric acid is needed along with the digestive enzyme pepsin to break down large fat molecules. So those of you that are eating meat and other heavier foods, if you eat the salad first, there's no hydrochloric acid left. So what happens is the meat is pushed on down through the alimentary canal and ends up impacting the colon and constipation as a result. So eat the salad last. That's why in Europe they always serve the salad last. So now when you eat food, you start chewing the food, the first thing you do is you start releasing enzymes. Okay? The enzymes are released in the saliva, they're stored in the salivary ducts, it's inside the mouth. The food with the enzyme is brought down into the stomach. There it combines and begins to form the amino acids. The amino acids are called peptides and polypeptides. The best reason not to eat meat with the formation of these amino acids, because if you look at the peptides in an animal and the peptides in a human being, the peptides are in an animal are different than a human being, and the human body cannot absorb the aminos properly. An example of that, let me draw a typical thing right here. Here, these would be like papain, pepsin, and that. These would be peptides forming polypeptides, and they're carbon atom chains in the body. Now, the first one would represent a chain, and when these things are lined up like this, you have a complete amino acid. If in the case of an animal, you eat an animal product, the first three might line up, the second three might line up, and they're absorbed, and they become denser. So this is an amino acid that's already in the body. This is the one to be digested. And as they digest, they combine chemically, making the nucleus of each amino more dense or solid. But in the case of an animal, maybe the first six would combine, but the last three would not. So you get a cancellation reaction. So 2/3 of the animal product did something, and 1/3 didn't. The 1/3 that didn't, what it does is causes an allergic condition in the body. And immediately when anybody eats meat, if you measure your blood pressure and your heartbeat, the blood pressure always goes up 20 to 30% in any person ever eating meat. Now, when the blood pressure and the heartbeat goes up 20 to 30% on the eating of meat, immediately causes the heart to go up in this rate, and it causes more heartbeats. The heart has X number of billions of beats in a lifetime, and if you're constantly eating meat, you're shortening the lifespan of the heart. The next condition that happens is in the arteries in the skin, the epithelial cells. And what happens there is if you look at the skin, here's the surface of the skin, I'll draw it here, right here, coming up like this. And epithelial cells in the arteries, the way the blood supply comes up, it makes a sharp bend at the surface of the skin and comes back down again. Well, what happens is when you're eating meat, the allergenic response causes an erosion at the top part of this blood vessel where it comes out to the surface of the skin. Just like if you had like the Mississippi River, when certain rains come, it starts eroding out certain banks on the outside. This happens every time you eat meat. When this happens, the body has to repair that damage, and that's what cholesterol is for. So the body immediately, when this toxic condition comes on, starts secreting cholesterol. So that therefore, every time you eat meat, it causes a erosion of the arteries, an increase in heartbeat, increase in blood pressure, and a secretion of cholesterol. That's why a lot of people on high cholesterol and low cholesterol diets can't get the same results, because some of them on a high cholesterol are meat eaters and some of them aren't. Okay? That's the reason why, because of that toxic reaction. Whereas a vegetable protein, like a tomato, for example, won't cause this reaction in the body. Now, I'm not saying those of you that are eating meat don't do like I did. When I learned all these medical facts about meat eating, I immediately stopped eating meat, instantly. Just right there, triple Leo, right? No more meat eating. And what I did 2 years later is I went into protein deprivation. And when protein deprivation went manifested on me, I came one day, I was looking, I had a normal arm, and all of a sudden this area in my arm turned bright red and swelled up a half an inch. And every portion of my body, this area of my chest, swelled up, became bright red, swelled up a half an inch. Areas on my legs, here, here, and here. My face, my cheeks swelled up, and my neck. So I was like a patchwork quilt. That condition lasted for 4 hours, and then it completely went neutral again, and the area that was swollen red went neutral, and the area that wasn't swollen swelled up. And I did that for 2 weeks. And then finally I found out that I had protein deprivation, and one of my teachers at the School of Axillary in San Diego, I went down there to him and asked him what's happening to me. I'm flashing hot, flashing cold. I couldn't feel any mental changes, but I knew that something was wrong with my body. It's protein deprivation. He sat me down and says, "You're going to have a steak." And I says, "Wait a minute. I can't digest meat. I haven't had a piece of meat in 2 years. He says, "Bet me." And he started frying the steak on the stove, and that smelled good. And I sat down and I ate that whole steak, and I felt so good afterward. And my body immediately was recovered from that. It didn't bring that shock anymore. So if you go off meat, don't go off it. You know, immediately go off it over a period of 7 years. It takes 7 years for the body to regenerate a complete set of organs. And all of the endocrine glands have different hormones in them and different enzymes in them that have trained us to digest and assimilate the food as we know it in our habitual patterns. So when you make a transition, make one transition 7 years. If you're going off meat, eat it 7 days a week, cut it down for the first year to say 5 days a week. And alternate your fish and your meat and your chicken like that.
Well, that was fun. Now we'll turn that puppy over and do the other side. Here comes the rest of it. Dr. Bell, where are you? Will you quit fooling around with a microphone? Give you a microphone and you get crazy. Every time. Come on. What do you mean there's no side B? Well, if you didn't do side B, then I'm going to put a whole other tape on. I can't believe this. See, we're checking it out here to see if there's any side B. Okay, no.
You have a question?
There you go.
Is there a difference between vegetarian protein and animal protein?
Yeah, there is. There is. It's in the chemical structure. And it breaks down in polypeptides, like I was telling you about. There is a difference, right? Animal protein is very close to human protein. Now, eggs, things like that, are closer. Eggs are good for you. The rule that I always learned from my teachers, and I found that it works, if it falls off a tree, what's it going to do? It's going to rot. You know, it's common sense. A chicken lays an egg. Somebody doesn't eat the egg, it rolls off on the floor and breaks. So I'm not saying in vegetarianism, abstain from protein totally. No, I eat eggs, I eat butter. These are natural byproducts of the animal. I just don't eat the animal itself. Chicken is not good for you, not because the chicken is not so good, it's because what the chickens are fed and raised. When I lived in Arkansas, we raised chickens. We raised a chicken in 19 weeks. We fed it full of chemicals, and it just swelled up. It was a protein swelling. And most of the chickens that we raised had cancer or pneumonia when we would pick them up. They'd have growths on them, tumors, or they'd be breeding so bad, tremendous amounts of pneumonia. Because the chickens were growing so fast, and there was very little attention taken to their actual health. All they wanted to do was make them grow fast. And they were just a big mucus bag, so they weren't that good. So you're better off on fish. Fish is your best bet. And red meat better than chicken. Although in the old days, you've been better off eating chicken versus red meat. The idea is to rotate the meat when you're eating it. Now, the next thing is when you digest, you chew the food up, mix with the enzymes, it goes down into the upper part of the stomach and the small intestine. Here, it's broken down from protein to carbohydrates. Now, the carbohydrate is like an explosive or volatile mixture in the small intestine when it gets down here, just above the ileocecal valve. The last part of digestion, when it's turned into carbohydrate in the lower part of the small intestine, this is what's called the last part of the Krebs cycle. And during the last part of the Krebs cycle, the liver secretes bile and the pancreas secretes insulin. So in the presence of carbohydrate, insulin, and bile comes oxygen through the airstream, through the lungs. And as soon as oxygen hits this mixture, it ignites in the body, producing body heat and electricity, magnetism, and all the things that give us that warm feeling that takes place in this area down here. So that's your last stage of digestion. Then, the fiber material that is not exploded is then moved out through the ileocecal valve after the heat process and out in the large intestine where the minerals are now extracted. The vitamins are taken out here and the minerals come out through here. And this chart, if you could read it clearly, shows you which each one of these folds breaks down a particular mineral. The science is down to that degree right now. And this iridology is very good at this point, because when you look at iridology, each one of these folds has an optic fiber going out to the eye. So an iridologist can see by each part of the eye, and if you look at the eyes all the way around the outside of the iris, you can see the actual shape of the colon. The same thing is, these fibers also go to the fingertips, so when we use Kirlian photography, we can see the electrical shape. He's looking at an optical shape, I'm looking at an electrical shape. So this is why the Kirlian photography is so beneficial in diagnosing the colon. And we're able, through Kirlian photography, and then using the barium x-ray, we can actually determine that. Because we put a small amount of barium in water inside the body, and an x-ray, it shows up as an actual glow like that. So now we can diagnose the comparison between the x-ray, the iridology, and the Kirlian photography. That's how we got the Kirlian photography evolved to where it is today, by these comparisons. Because in the holistic movement, everybody's working as brothers, and we're communicating and sharing our knowledge all the time. So it gives us total knowledge of each other's respective fields. So it gives us a wider degree of presentation. Now, man expresses himself on the physical plane with his inventions and his achievements in science. And everything that he presents is nothing more than a reconstitution of his own atomical workings within his body. For example, an automobile engine. An automobile engine, through the carburetor, takes oxygen and mixes it with gas. This is drawn into the cylinder pressure, and the piston goes up and compresses that air mixture. Then a spark plug ignites it, causing a combustion action, pushing the spark or the piston back down, which is on a crankshaft, creating work. Then there's two valves. One valve open to let the air charge and gas charge in, and then closed for combustion. And then as the piston went down, another valve opened, and we had exhaust. In an automobile engine, one of the problems that lies is improper combustion causes a building up of carbon, which causes the combustion not to be very accurate or efficient anymore, so the engine loses horsepower. The second thing that happens in an automobile engine is the exhaust valve starts getting a carbon incrustation as a result of this problem down here, improper combustion. So when the cylinder comes up, you get leakage in the pressures and you don't get complete combustion. The human body, strangely enough, has the same problem. The compression cycle is when the food comes down into the small intestine and is compressed because of peristolic action. It actually is under pressure, okay? And then when the bile comes in and the insulin comes in from the pancreas and is ignited by the oxygen and electricity, it creates a small pressure. And then the ileocecal valve opens and that pressure forces that fiber out. So it's the completion of that combustion cycle going through that ileocecal valve that forces this thing right here, and this peristalsis continues. So it's a pressure combustion cycle. Human beings have the same problem. They take the fruit, they eat vegetables, they get improper combustion in the small intestine. This causes unburnt materials to go out, and this ileocecal valve becomes jammed. And pretty soon what happens is, this material here gets halfway through here, and then starts going backwards and pushing it right back up in the small intestine. And that's when you start getting into disease conditions, and one of those is cancer of the colon. So you begin to see the comparison between an ordinary automobile engine, understand how it works and how the body works. It's really not that complicated. Just understand we've got to have clean burning or clean digestive by good, adequate habits, by understanding that what kind of gasoline we're taking into our systems, and by keeping this system clean. In an automobile engine, every once in a while we take the heads off and give it a valve job. In a colon, a little colonics, and if you don't want to go get a colonic, a coffee enema is highly suggested. So this removes the sluggish, tired feeling within ourselves when we understand to keep the system flowing properly. 2,000 years ago they were doing this. It even mentions it in the Bible. They're using it with gourds. Okay? Now, one of the important things that this will help you do is one of my problems. I was a very sick person. This is how I got into medicine. I was born with polio. I'm right now slightly sunk in the chest. I have a scar right here from an appendix operation where I had a wiped out colon. Okay, I had asthma so bad that when I was 6 years old, they used to put tubes up in my nose and drain them. And I had some other diseases too. So I was sick, and the doctors used to give up on me. He was the sickest kid around, but I became very healthy by mastering all these things. But one problem I used to have is every year in the fall, the Asian flu would come around. They'd make up all these flus, and they'd come around, and I'd get them. Then the springtime would come, everybody's healthy, and I'd come down with a flu in the springtime, and there wasn't even going around a virus at that time. What was happening was, I was getting the flu, the virus would settle in my stomach, and during the winter we have a tendency to keep ourselves warm. We find that by eating denser foods in the wintertime, everybody's meatier then too, this would impact that colon, that virus would be lodged in here. Springtime would come, I'd start exercising, getting out. My body would say, let's eat a little bit of fruit, it's here. I start eating fruit and I get a slight elimination,
it automatically detoxifies to a degree because our bodies are trained to do that. And what happens is I'd open up part of this wall of this intestine right here, and there the virus would be exposed to the bloodstream. So I'd pick up last year's virus, and now I'd go with the disease again. This happens to a lot of people. It's called reinfection. You know, a lot of people reinfect themselves, especially with the runny nose and cold viruses. That's the most notorious one, and that's stored in this large intestine here. So now in the body, when this is working, we assimilate the minerals. Minerals represent 5% of our body, but they control 95% of the enzyme and the digestion of vitamins in the body. So the mineral controls the entire body. That's homeopathic medicine. That's the science of that change.
I like to look at minerals as vibration. Now, minerals are taken up in the large intestine and carried up to the brain and stored in the brain cells in the mitochondrion of each cell inside the brain. They are released by the thinking process, which is produced by action on the physical plane when the human body digests food in the Krebs cycle, producing body heat and magnetism in the presence of prana carried in the air supply and then has an encounter with another being or another energy. This releases mineral. There's quite a bit that's going on to cause this to take place. And you can, not only can you know whether you're deficient in minerals or not, but you can do a simple analysis on yourselves and tell which minerals you're deficient in. Example, we have three classes of minerals, and they're divided into vibration or octaves, which I'll cover in a few minutes. Okay. The first class, I always do it backwards, the first class are low frequency. These are minerals like iron, copper, things like that. Then we have a middle, which is chrome. Remember, chrome on automobiles. And then we have the high frequency, which is gold, and all the precious metals that go with gold, vanadium, titanium, things like that. In our bodies, we have three different nervous networks that distribute this electricity, these electrical pulses, at different vibrations determined by the minerals. The lowest frequency network of distribution in our bodies is the autonomic nervous system. When copper and zinc and iron are digested by the body and carried up to the brain, this causes the subconscious body functions to take place, circulation, breath, respiratory, heartbeat, things like that. When you digest the middle octave, the thinking process becomes conscious and is distributed through the sympathetic nervous network. Thoughts, when you dissolve chrome and all the middle octave elements, you like, let's go to the store, let's, I'm cold, I feel warm. These basic movement, pragmatic feelings come from the dissolution of those minerals. Then when you dissolve the precious elements like gold and titanium and molybdenum and vanadium and things like that, the thoughts are higher, of the spiritual nature, of God, of the inner ways of life. And these are distributed through what is called the vagus nerve, or the parasympathetic nervous network, the 10th cranial nerve, whatever you call that nervous network. It's the power supply that runs the little voice inside of our head that tells us to do or not to do something that ego often goes against. And then, of course, the little voice is usually right, and the ego, through action, shows us that we should have done what we were supposed to do by listening to ourselves a little bit closer. So if you find yourself deficient, if you're anemic, you know you're deficient in iron, if you're too lackadaisical and you can't think about basic survival, then you're lacking in the middle frequency vibrations. If you're having problems with meditation, you're preoccupied when you're trying to reach out to God, then you can bet that you're deficient on the higher frequency minerals. I mean, this is just basic mineral deficiencies that we're talking about now. So the first thing that I always tell people is to get on a program of cleansing. I usually recommend coffee enemas if you can't afford to go to a clinic, or there isn't one around. Some people don't have them near them, but do oxygen therapy and things like that. We just do coffee enemas. And we use kava coffee. It's a very good coffee for that. And it's a tremendous high when you do an enema. Believe me, I know I've done many of them. It may not sound all that exciting, but once you've done a few of them, they can be very habit-forming. It's a good habit to form. And I always recommend that you use kava because it's a low-acid coffee. You don't want a caffeinated coffee, you want a deacidified coffee, because caffeine in the large intestine has a drawing effect. It draws all the toxins and poisons out of the body. Then it stimulates the liver. The liver then puts large amounts of bile causes the stool to look very yellow, like a young baby, but it has a tremendous cleansing effect on the body. One coffee enema will cleanse you for about 2 days. If you're doing any fasting, I'm sure a lot of you do fasting, about the third day of the fast is a good time to start doing the enemas along with the colon therapy. Now, the next thing that happens then is you have to break the wall down. And most people have worms. Worms produce about 33 different poisons into man. And the problem is not so much the worms, the poison of the worms, when the worms go to the bathroom and leave their waste material behind, causes sluggishness in our brains and bodies and minds. But the main thing where we get in trouble with worms is when they lay eggs, they get in the bloodstream, and then the young worms then are moved up into the lymphatic system. And so you have problems with the lymphatic system. Lymphatic system is a water network that, in one level, releases perspiration, but it gets rid of all the poisons throughout the body. And it oftentimes causes cancer of the lymphatics. And I once found one worm in one lady's brain. We found it through iridology. And she was having seizures like epilepsy, because I worked a lot with epileptics. And we found that we just put her on the normal colon therapy thing and then a good cleansing program, and we got rid of the worm that was in her brain, and their seizures went to zero. The doctors were absolutely up against the wall. It was found by accident. So, I mean, these are some of the complications that we've run into not understanding the body and not understanding how worms can affect us. And about 9 out of 10 people have worms. I had worms. I had lots of them, and I didn't even know it. And I had never eaten eaten pork since I was a small child. That's usually where pork is usually the best source of worms, because they can't be destroyed by cooking in pork. Certain fruits, if not washed properly, is another source. But the main source of worms is pork. Now, the way that we have in our body what is called a wave motion. When you swallow, you can stand on your head, you'll still assimilate the food. The wave motion takes place by a vibration called peristalsis. In the pyramids that we develop to wear on your head, we develop one with titanium. Titanium worn on the body has a peristolic effect, so it aids in the colon and it aids in the digestive processes of the body.